Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Reaction now to yesterday's dramatic protests that brought morning rush hour traffic along I-93 to a standstill. In a pair of coordinated actions, the protesters formed human barricades north of the city in Medford, where they chained themselves together, and to the south in Milton, where they chained themselves to cement-filled barrels that blocked the highway. Police arrested 29 of them. They were arraigned on various charges, including disorderly conduct, trespassing, and resisting arrest. Here's State Police Colonel Timothy Alban.
Tolerance for First Amendment, tolerance for free speech, tolerance for people presenting opposing points of view, that's all fine. But when you start intentionally or unintentionally risking lives or creating more danger by what you do, and I think the public has to step up and really become spokesmen for this as well.
The demonstrators say they were protesting police and state violence against black people. None of those arrested were black. In a statement, they described themselves as a non-black group of Pan-Asians, Latinos, and white people. Megan Collins spoke for the protesters and described their motives.
In order to draw attention to the sort of white complacency of people coming in from outside the city into Boston, into a city that's deeply segregated, where people of color are unfairly over-policed.
The protests took place on the birthday of slain civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. They were the latest in a series of demonstrations across the country following police killings of unarmed black men in Ferguson, Missouri, and New York City last year. But yesterday's actions raise big questions around public safety, civil rights, legitimate protest, and who exactly these protesters are speaking for. These are all questions that the Reverend Eugene Rivers has been thinking about. He's co-founder of the Boston 10-Point Coalition and pastor at the Azusa Christian Community Church in Boston. And he's with us now, and we're happy to have him. Reverend, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Anthony.
It's really good to have you. Also with us is Peniel Joseph. He's a history professor and founding director of Tufts University's Center for the Study of Race and Democracy. He's also a contributing editor to The Root. And Professor Peniel Joseph, good to have you back on Radio Boston.
Oh, good to be here.
And listeners, we want to ask you into this conversation. What did you make of yesterday's protest? This country has a long history of peaceful protest. Did yesterday's action fit into that? Were they justified, in your view? Do the protesters speak for you? Did they go too far? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Eugene Rivers, I'd like to start with you because I know you sort of, you took issue in a big way with yesterday's protesters. What was your biggest concern?
Let me say that everyone should have the opportunity, they have the right to exercise their constitutionally guaranteed right for free expression, number one. Number two, protest can play a very important role in the history of black people. Protest has been a component. Number three, I want to quote Professor Brandon M. Terry at Harvard University, who said that for protest to be functional, it should be provocative, it should be pedagogical, and it should have a programmatic outcome. There have to be some specific outcomes. What we have in yesterday's instance, and I've actually marched with a number of these young people to date, in addition to marching in Ferguson with the organizers and meeting with them, it's probably about maybe between a half a dozen and a dozen marches. My concern is that, you know, the same community that produced Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, Ella Baker, Angela Davis, Cornel West, Professor Peniel Joseph, Professor Brandon Terry, the same people that produced those people don't need white people as their voice. And I'll just end on this point. It would be inconceivable for a black preacher to say he spoke for white women or for a black black heterosexual male to say that he was a spokesman for the gay community. That would not be tolerated if we were talking about other groups. There's no way on God's earth that white women would tolerate patriarchy being articulated out of the mouth of a black male. So why is it okay for white people to assume that they can speak for black people?
And so I want to just read a statement, and because this is right along the point that you're making. So let me just read this. First of all, we did reach out to the protesters. We didn't. They didn't respond. We reached out to Black Lives Matter, which supported this group, by the way. And they said the two...
But didn't show up.
They didn't show up. But they said, here's the state. They didn't want to come on our program, but here's the statement that they released. The two groups of activists organized these actions to use their collective voices to resist and disrupt the overarching system that oppresses black people and to expressly accept the responsibility of white and non-black people of color to organize and act to end racial profiling, unjust incarceration, and murder of black people. I want to get you to respond to that, but Peniel Joseph, I don't want to leave you out here. What's your response to Reverend Rivers' response to this?
Good afternoon, Professor. Hey, how you doing? Happy New Year, brother.
Happy New Year. You know, I share some of those concerns, but the way I looked at yesterday's protests were slightly different in this sense. When you think about the civil rights movement, there were always supporters of the movement. I'm thinking about the Southern Student Organizing Committee. I'm thinking about different white organizers and Latino organizers and Asian American organizers who organized on behalf and in support of the Black Panthers. When we think about Free Huey P. Newton in the 1960s, so the idea that there's never been—I definitely want our listeners to understand that in the history of the civil rights movement, Black Power movement, there have been groups who are non-Black who are organizing and not speaking for the community, but doing different political actions, whether that's in New York, where I'm from, and I'm very familiar with that, or the Bay Area, or in between. So that has happened historically. Now, certainly it's something different if a group is saying that they are actually specifically speaking for the black community. I'm not sure that this is what these protesters were doing, but when we think about this idea of Black Lives Matter, there's something very, very universal about this, even as it's being specific, because so many black people are being killed and murdered in this country. So there's going to be other groups of people who, we've seen it with the different millennials marching. We've seen whole groups of white and Latino and Asian American, and I think that's very good. Certainly that's different if some organization that doesn't have black people is saying that they are speaking for the black community. There's a problem there. I'm not sure if that's what these groups are saying.
Well, let me ask you about this. Reverend Rivers, you brought up a really interesting point about past protests, and you said one of the components of successful protests is sort of a programmatic objective. I want to ask you about this. So this protest took place on Martin Luther King's birthday. That wasn't a coincidence. Were these present? I mean, you've made clear how you felt about these folks speaking for black people, but were these protests in the spirit of Martin Luther King in any way?
Let's talk about that. Yep. Now, number one, when they organized the boycotts in Montgomery, there was a specific objective, desegregation, right, of those buses and other institutions. The Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act, in reverse order, sequentially, were specific legislative agendas that they organized around to achieve a very specific goal. And I want to add to that, Mayor Walsh extended an invitation to the organizers on more than one occasion, say, okay, all right, we're the racists, got it. We'll sit down with you and let's have a conversation about Black Lives Matter, you know, the fact that, you know, black people are being oppressed. So what's not clear, and I've asked people, what's the end game? What's the long game? What are the legislative or political agendas?
Let's listen to Mayor Walsh, by the way, because we actually have a clip of the mayor addressing the protesters just on this issue, Reverend Rivers. So let's listen to what he said.
I'd ask the protesters to use a little bit of common sense here. I've reached out to the protesters on several occasions to have conversations about the issues that people have, to talk about the challenges ahead of us. But doing things like this, I don't see the benefit of putting concrete barrels on the highway and shutting down the highway for rush hour traffic.
So, Peniel Joseph, I'd like to ask you, Eugene Rivers raised an interesting question there. The end game. Is it clear to you what the end game of this particular group of protesters
Well, was? No. This particular group, I don't know, but I think in terms of what's been happening with the Boston Black Lives Matter and nationally, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been certainly different. There's a FergusonDemandsAction.org. There's different websites that you can go to where people have been talking about specific demands. The Brennan Center at NYU and people have been pushing for an executive order that changes the way in which we do federal criminal justice grants and review that would really lower the number of prisoners that we have. So there's been very specific policy proposals both at the local level and at the national level. Certainly the ACLU right here in Boston, and I've been in meetings with the ACLU and other community activists in Boston in terms of the report that they issued in terms of racial profiling in Boston and trying to get some traction on that. And there's some Black Lives Matter activists who've been connected to that as well. So this specific protest, I'm not sure if they've had any specific demands and who exactly they're connected to. But one thing I will say is that when you think about social movements, and I'm thinking about 1964 and the proposed Stalin at the World's Fair in New York City, there's always going to be provocative aspects of a social movement, even parts that you don't agree with. But I think the important thing is that these energies have been unleashed. So you might have a group that's doing something that you don't agree with, but it's part of a larger ferment that's bubbling up in the society. And I think that's what we're seeing right now, because you don't have to agree with every single aspect. And even Dr. King, I mean, when Dr. King was marching in Memphis in one of the last demonstrations he led, there were undisciplined folks who were not part of the march, people connected to the invaders and others, who caused violence on that march, right? Yeah. And King had meetings with them. He had meetings with gang leaders for hours in Chicago, in Memphis, trying to tell people, look, if you're not going to be a constructive part of this movement, I would please implore you to not do that kind of violence, because we're doing something very specific, that's policy specific, that's progressive for the whole community. So rather than necessarily, I wouldn't demonize these protesters, I'd say, hey, certainly I agree with what Brandon Terry has said and what Eugene Rivers has said as well. When I think about social movements, they're creatively disruptive, they're morally impassioned, and they're policy specific.
Interesting.
So you've got to be connected to policy. We're all on the same page there. But I also think that this kind of force and action that we're seeing is very, very important, because when we think about the context of the 1960s and the 1970s, and not just Birmingham and Selma, but Jackson State and Kent State, and we had even nuns who were talking about Black power. And
right, so a real historical precedent for what's going on here. Eugene Rivers.
Well, actually, Professor Joseph has made an excellent point, but I have to push him a little bit. Number one, I approached, as a resident of Dorchester for over 20 years, I approached some of the Black Lives Matter individuals and said, listen, some of the grassroots organizers who are not students and who are from the working class in the Black community would like to meet to have a dialogue. It was rejected. And I want to come back to Mayor Walsh's point. Mayor Walsh extended an invitation. Okay, we got it. Racism, ubiquitous oppression. Yes, in 2015, this is what we have. It was rejected. So we can't suck on both ends of the straw in this game. You can't, on the one hand, decry the ubiquitous, suffocating racism of white people, and then the guy that you say is the racist says, okay, I got it. I'm a racist. Got it. Let's sit down and talk so we can address some of the policy-specific issues, and you reject it. That's not real politics. That's theater and a game. So, Professor, why did the Black Lives Matter group, when the mayor of Boston extended the overture to them to sit down and discuss their grievances, did they reject it and then call it real politics? Help me, Professor.
I wasn't aware of that, and two, you'd have to ask their leadership. I mean,
I can't find him.
And again, we want to make clear that we did invite members of Black Lives Matter on this
program.
And
he couldn't find them.
We found them. They just didn't want to come in. Come on.
I mean, certainly, I'm sure they have their own reasons, but I know nationally, and not just the local movement here, nationally, people have met with different politicians and leaders because they're interested in specific policy reform. And at the end of the day, even if we criticize institutions, the reforms, or even if you're saying you want a revolution or radical change and transformation that you're looking for, are connected to these very institutions. So certainly you have to sit down and talk. And it's not been all of them, Gene, because you think about Phil Agnew and Brittany Planquette, and they all met with President Obama, who are part of the National Black Lives Matter, both Ferguson, Chicago, others, on December 1st, 2014.
But here in Boston, Professor.
So that's something.
Commissioner Evans, Commissioner Evans extended an invitation to sit down and go over the ACLU report, and they refused to do it.
But
that doesn't work.
But Reverend Rivers, do you take issue with the cause that Black Lives Matter has articulated today?
I've been working on that cause for 40 years.
I live in
Dorchester.
Right.
My house was shot into twice and robbed six times working in the black community.
Right.
So the issue of, I don't need the black speech. And I've been working on this thing for a period that is, over 40 years. Some of these kids are barely 25, so I don't dispute that. I don't need the black speech. What I'm saying now is that the black community has enough problems, and we don't need white people who say they speak for us and refuse to speak to us. Carol Rose, ACLU, she didn't come into the black community and talk with grassroots, on-the-ground activists so she could get an alternative perspective. It's good to meet with the professors and the elite, and the sophisticated intellectuals, that's all the good thing. It's great. But you've got to be able. Carol Rose and the ACLU should come into the hood, the real hood, and sit down with some black folks and so we can give them. Because I don't want you to speak for me when you can't talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's called racism, or sexism if I were a male and we were talking about women.
Interesting. Peniel Joseph, our time is running out, so I'm probably going to give the last word to you. But
absolutely.
But here's my question.
I think what the ACLU has been trying to do is not just meet with elites, because I've been at several meetings.
We're looking for her in the hood. Tell her to come to the hood. Standing invitation, Professor.
All right, let's let Peniel Joseph have the fun.
It wasn't just elites. But here's what I'll say. I think what we're seeing is a national movement, and locally we have a version of that national movement. And I would probably say there's going to be many different leaders, because we've seen a lot of horizontal or grassroots leadership, and this is not a vertical movement in terms of Black Lives Matter. I think what people are trying to be is, again, morally impassioned, creatively disruptive, but policy specific, to see what can we do on the ground in Boston to ameliorate things like not just criminal justice reform, but also public schools, also teenage unemployment, and also violence and drugs. And
Peniel Joseph, I'm going to jump in only because our clock has wound down, but you've expressed yourself beautifully. Thanks for joining us. That's Peniel Joseph, history professor and founding director of the Center for the Study of Race and Democracy at Tufts University, and Eugene Rivers, co-founder of the Boston 10-Point Coalition, pastor at the Azusa Christian Community Church. Always appreciate your point of view and your passion. Thank you for coming in.
Hands up, don't shoot.
All right. And that's it for today and for this week. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks. Have a great weekend. Join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.